you're a person of color in America, you better have patience. America been taking a long time to get it right. You're a woman. You've been waiting for since the world began almost, right, to get it right. So we're working on it. All right. So this sermon entitled Should Unitarian Universalists Pray is one that I try to go back to in different ways over the 20 years of my ministry, because within Unitarian Universalist circles, you get such a broad spectrum of ideas around this subject. Just an aside, and we've always got asides, this little pamphlet, A Prayer for Every Need, it's from the Guidepost Outreach, and it's really the work of Norman Vincent Peale. This was the single most popular thing I ever used in my chaplaincy. So for over 15 years of going to see people on psych units and sitting by the morgue waiting to see their loved one pulled out on a tray or emergency rooms, this little pamphlet, all of 31 pages, captured the imagination of Jew, Christian, Muslim, atheist, agnostic. So if you don't have one, I'm going to try to find some copies and bring them here. But you can call Guidepost. They'll give them to you. We ought to get some for the guys inside. You know, it's a very useful little pamphlet. Anyway, to the words that I wrote, and then some more of my connecting the dots. I was raised a liberal Christian. In fact, I was a Presbyterian for the first 10 or so years of my life. I didn't know how awful it was at the time, I gotta tell you. And then I chose to, the Presbyterians are gonna get me. But I got issues with Presbyterians. We'll talk about that another time. I chose to attend the local Episcopal church in my neighborhood in Washington Heights because that's where most of my buddies went. They had a gymnasium, and they had a summer camp, and they had a young priest on Friday nights that would host dance parties for us in the gymnasium. And it was awesome. He would play Godspell. That's what I remember him playing the music from Godspell on his guitar. He was young and he was cool. He wore jeans and a collar. So I've done that when I'm going to visit the brothers in the lockup sometimes. I want to be a little hipper. You know, I wear a kufi, a collar, and some jeans or something. Say, look, I'm not all of that. All right? But anyway, so that was like my early years. And the truth be told, my grandmother, Ina Agatha Leslie Gordon from Jamaica, was my guiding light in terms of all things prayer. She taught me about the church. She explained to me the importance of ethical, moral, godly behaviors. This was one pious, uptight lady, I gotta tell you. Oh, my Lord. She was the one that knelt me down even when I didn't want to. She would yank my little body down to my knees, and she showed me how to pray. Grandma had a simple formula, and it went like this. One, tell God about all the things you are grateful for. Two, tell God all the things you are sorry for and ask forgiveness. Three, ask God to bless all the people you love and care about and anyone that needs help. That was important. He said, and even those people I don't like, God, and I'm praying for them, you do it too now, right? She was sincere about that. And number four, ask God for the things you really want. I wanted a lot. The funny part about this is that it became problematic as I was growing up because I wasn't getting any of the things I had been praying for. And as I grew older, it seemed like that part of the prayer life just wasn't ever going to happen. Funny thing, fast forward 40 years, and a country western singer named Garth Brooks, of all people, had a profound impact on my life, particularly around this whole prayer concept. He sang a song called Unanswered Prayers, and it really captured my heart, mind, and spirit. He and his wife ran into his old high school heartthrob, and he realized when he talked to this woman that there wasn't anything about her that he would want anymore. But it was the unanswered prayer that was so poignant. He had been praying to God all through high school that this girl would be mine. Right? Do you know the song? Sometimes I thank God for unanswered prayers. Remember when you're talking, he says, to the man upstairs. Just because he may not answer doesn't mean he don't care. Some of God's greatest gifts are unanswered prayers. I can't sing. Please forgive me. So it was like really amazing that this song was so, it was like Mickey Mantle hitting it out of the park. But let me get down with my brother Willie Mays. It was Willie Mays hitting it out the park, because all those things that I had prayed for, I remember I wanted money. And then I heard of a friend who prayed for money and his wife died. Well, he got all the money, but that man was blue as he could be. And I knew another one that wanted a promotion, prayed for a promotion, and she got the promotion. And she ended up having a nervous breakdown. The job was too darn much for her. So I came to understand unanswered prayers as really the godsend. Because in my foolish, narcissistic way of being, I've asked for many things that I really never needed. And more importantly for me, had my prayers been answered to fix my first marriage, I wouldn't have the beautiful wife and marriage that I have now. So praying for things sometimes may not be the ultimate answer for you, right? All right, so back to Grandma and this whole religious conviction thing. Grandma and I stayed close together for those 10 years or so, and then I wandered astray from her. I reached the age of that confirmation time at the Episcopal Church, and I was like, I'm not memorizing this stuff. I had stopped believing in the God they talked about in the Holy Scriptures. I couldn't buy into man giving birth to anything, because I had seen women give birth, and no male give birth to anything. He may participate in the making of something, but he's not the one giving birth. It just didn't make sense that this old man could be the puppet master directing everything. I had to let go of that way of understanding religiosity. The biblical narrative just didn't hold that answer for me anymore. In fact, I was a child in search of more, and I started reaching out for all kinds of things, much to my parents' chagrin. I found myself being intrigued by the words of Malcolm X as I read his text and his autobiography. And then I found myself intrigued by a Muslim girl that was in my class, and I wanted to get close to her. And her father said I had to come to the mosque and learn about Islam and all that. And we couldn't even sit next to each other in class. He came to school, made sure we were separate. It was a mess, but I went to Malcolm's Masjid on 116th Street. Not because of theological concerns. But you know, you never know how the Great Spirit is working. Dr. Ben, who some of you may know, have said, heaven resides in a woman, and I cleaned it up, but it resides in the recesses of a woman. Dr. Ben's analysis is quite right. Men will do many things, and I guess women, too, will do many things when they want to get close to somebody, right? So I learned all I could about Islam at that early age. And prayer was so important in an Islamic context. A Muslim has to pray those five prayers a day. Well, that was too much praying for me. You know, I couldn't be. So I had to leave Islam alone. But I was on that search and discovery mode. And so my cousin came back from Vietnam, and he had been like a Buddhist over and then he tried to get all of us to become Buddhists. And so there was meditation and prayer of a different sort. Here's the rub, folks. Despite having left Sunday school when I was about 12 years old, despite having traveled a theological journey that's taken me from Christianity, through Islam, Buddhism, Native American forms of worship, West African, you know, Santeria, you know. I was almost going to wear all white today. I was thinking about it. You know, Candombe, you know, what, Juju. Despite having traveled a theological journey that's taken me up and down, high and low and everywhere, I think Grandma would be proud. I never gave up prayer. Prayer is the foundation of my spiritual life, and it's what's allowed me to serve a largely white denomination that has sometimes given me a hard way to go. It's allowed me to stay in America when I wanted to give up on America and maybe find myself in Africa or the Caribbean or Brazil or anywhere else that didn't lie to me, because my own country was lying to me about my place in this great land of opportunity. See, my prayer life has gotten me through every negative, every hard, every twisted situation I ever found myself in. Now, I'm a guy that likes to do his research. If I can't find something to back it up, I go, well, that doesn't hold water. You know, just Gordon's thoughts aren't enough. I'm going to try to find a few others that are going to, you know. I mean, Lisa probably says, you don't trust your own intuition. Well, that may be a man's problem. Maybe women, they are able to trust their own intuition. I don't know what you other guys here think. I'm not so sure about my intuition. So I did some research. And I read an article in the Washington Post recently about a Jewish atheistic family. And the new research was done by the Pew Research Institute. And it said that there's a range of beliefs. 18% of atheists say religion has importance in their life. 18% of atheists say religion has importance in their life. 26% say they are spiritual or religious. I thought they were atheists. Another 14% believe in God or a universal spirit. Of all this that was found, it said Americans who say they don't believe in God, not all of them call themselves atheists. I'm wondering, what are we doing with the language? Has words hold no meaning anymore? But I guess it's like women using the B word or brothers using the N word. I find both of those words rather vile, but people have decided to flip the switch on how words are used and what value we ascribe to them. I guess maybe Americans have either dumbed themselves down so, or else they decided to take this atheistic understanding and give it new meaning. I guess they never heard of agnosticism, right? I don't know. There's something going on within the American populace. Here's something that was even more interesting for me. In the spiritual autobiography of Dag Hammarskjöld, and I'm always struggling with that name. Did I get it right? I hope so. Hammarskjöld. He tells us, God does not die on the day when we cease to believe in a personal deity, but we die on the day when our lives cease to be illumined by the steady radiance renewed daily of awe and wonder, the source of which is beyond all reason. That's powerful. That's powerful. So this prayer thing, prayer and reason, prayer and radiance, prayer and daily renewal, prayer and awe and wonder. See, I think they go hand in hand. I think it's a place where we can go, where we can be childlike if we want to be, or we can be as serious as an adult has to be when we go into the prayer world. See, it's your personal world where you get to say, think, touch, feel, smell, explain, engage anything and everything that's on your heart, mind, and spirit. Your prayer world is yours. Nobody has the right to enter into it, save you invite them into your space. See, many of us had to learn, now I lay me down to sleep and I pray to some deity my soul to keep. But that's not the real prayer I want to engage you with. I want to suggest that the prayers of your life, that going up to Colgate's going to be all right, and you're going to find something good up there. Or coming into a new congregation, you're going to get something that you need, something to build you up, shore you up, inform your next life decisions. Or that the music that's played is going to tinkle and touch your spirit and you're going to engage in a new way because your prayers were answered on the day you let go of the troubles and you let the possibilities of the universe happen to you. I don't know if Harold knew he was coming in here today, but I'm so glad. See, it don't have to be I'm so glad that Jesus rescued me. I'm so glad your body was able to come here and you are here with your people that love you and know you and long for you to be here. Prayer was answered by you or me or somebody in here to see Harold again. And when we engage in it, when Earl engaged in coming back here for some reason, could be over in Montclair with the high and the mighty and join the big church and they got snacks galore and everything, you know, he chose to be here. That's a prayer answered by somebody that longs to have a population in this congregation that's vibrant and alive. See, you use often feel the absence of wonder. But I'm telling you, in your prayer life, you begin the book of your own wondrous ideas. What dream ever was realized without first imagination? Imagination is wonder. You may not call it God-given, but I do, because every great thing that I've ever done, seen, smelled, touched, tasted, hugged, came from something greater than me. And my prayer life has led me to every high point of my life. I had a dream, and I prayed about it. And I knelt down, or I walked, or while I was digging in my garden, every time that hole hit the earth, I was saying, Lord, let my back hold up. And when that garden produced something of value, something delicious to eat, the prayer was answered because I put in the time, I put in the effort. I didn't need the great I am to make it so. She already imbued us with the ability to make things happen. You grow your spirit each day. You build your temple. You pray to the great I am that is within you. Because if we are made in that deity's image, then you are part and parcel of it. See, Dr. Ben Yohanken, if you haven't read his works, Google Dr. Ben. Dr. Ben said, if your God doesn't look like you, then your God is the wrong one for you. He said it long ago when he'd go to black churches and here they had a white Jesus for all the Negroes to pray to. Lord have mercy. Bad, bad, bad. All right? My Korean friends have their Bibles and all of the apostles are pictured in the Bible. They all look Korean. I love the Bible that came out in the 1970s with everybody having afros and dashikis. See, God, spirit, prayer life, awe, wonder, spirituality, religiosity, it's all in your hands. You are the author. You are the creative force. You are the imagination of the divine working its miracles. So if you haven't considered prayer in a long time, I say get to it. If you haven't been down on your knees and getting down on your knees is too hard, I understand sitting prayers are okay. If you haven't given consideration to what prayer life is within a Unitarian Universalist context, let me share just a few with you. There's a pamphlet on the UUA website called Unitarian Universalist Views of Prayer, edited by Catherine Bowers. She has 8 reflections, and I'll just read a couple of them for you. This is from a man named Roger Cowan. In a desperate moment, I cried out for help, and I was answered. Some years later, I am still a humanist. I believe that religion is about this world, about bringing justice and mercy and power of love into the life here and now. Yet I am a humanist who prays, who begins each morning with devotional readings and a time of silence and prayer. Why do I do this? He says, I need quiet time to express my gratitude. I need humility. I pray because alone I am not enough, and also I am too much. I express gratitude for the gift of aliveness. I assert my oneness with you all of you in humankind and creation. When I pray, I acknowledge that God is not me. That's powerful. Here's one from Daniel Budd. The best advice on prayer I have yet found was given long ago by Jesus of Nazareth. When Jesus taught his disciples to pray, he said that prayer was nothing to flaunt about or show off. It is a personal matter, an intimate aspect of our living, and not for the public proof of our righteousness. Prayer begins in the heart, that secret place within us all. Other living traditions have taught me that prayer is an honest expression of how we are in the very depths and doubts of our own soul. Prayer is that admission that we are fragile, fallible, and finite. Prayer is giving up, a way of creating a place within ourselves for this mystery to dwell. Prayer is a covenant we make to be of service. Prayer is a way of living with the very questions that perplex us. Prayer is an opening of the human heart. When Jesus taught his disciples to pray, he said, pray like this, simply from the heart. And lastly, this one from Lucy Virginia Hitchcock. One morning many years ago, in those trance-like moments between sleeping and waking, a dream image came to me which has affected my subsequent life. A mist was streaming down into my body from above. It flowed through my limbs, but when it reached my hands, it was stopped by the blunt ends of my fingers. I woke up and held my hand before my face. I knew that if I did not move my hands and feet and voice, the Holy Spirit would be trapped in my body and unable to do my share of its work in the world. Prayer for me is taking time to be present for that gracious Spirit and aware of that gift that came to and through me simply because I am alive. One word for this time of presence is gratitude. Another is meditation, in which by observing my breathing, I become ever more aware of creation in process. In addition, prayer is theological reflection and social strategy, alone and in groups. This leads to a return of gifts bestowed, as in the wonderful universalist affirmation, which I love to recite in our communal worship, love is the doctrine. The quest for truth is our sacrament, and service is our prayer. Service, especially the prophetic, artistic work of the systematic change for economic justice, is my prayerful response to all I have been given. When I act for justice and when I act with compassion, the Spirit in me is no longer trapped in my fingertips. It can move and shape and shape and sing. So folks, I don't know where you are on your theological journey. I don't know what the spectrum of theology, philosophical, sociological, cultural, anthropological, I don't know where you are with social science or any kind of edumacated process. What I do know is that when you're tired, what that sister say, I'm tired of being tired. When you're weary, when your heart's broken, when you got no more to give, when you had enough, prayer can help you. You may be sending it out to the nothingness, or you may be sending it to something that can help. You may be relieving yourself of tensions in your body that just need a way of release. I've known many of people in jail, in hospitals, in psychiatric units. I've known many of people broken and bruised. And the one constant in all of them was that they connected to something greater than themselves. And it was useful to them. So this is theology from the underside. If you didn't know how poor folks get themselves through hard times, let me cue you in on it. A solid and strong prayer life can move mountains. It always has, and I believe it always will. Good luck with your prayer life, folks. Let me know if this was too much theological discourse for you. I'll pay heed, but I won't change my way of doing things. And I just wish you a very happy Easter on this Orthodox Easter Sunday. Amen. All right. What we got? We got a good hymn to close, don't we? We do. I like this one. This one might shake me to the core. Number 298 in your hymnal, Wake Now My Senses.